Well, good morning. It's 4 minutes past the hour, and this is the Faith Radio Network as we wake up together on a Monday. Coming up in less than 5 minutes, Rebecca Maxwell, Paul Perreault, and I will update you on some of the big stories from over the weekend and a few you may have missed. And later on this hour, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News will update us on the persecuted church in the Middle East and in North Korea. So stick around for that. Well, Americans definitely on edge this morning with all the developing news over the past 24 hours or so. Federal authorities have conducted a traffic stop. You may have heard this on SRN News. A vehicle of interest stopped in that Chelsea bombing last night in Brooklyn. A law enforcement source says a number of individuals possibly connected to that explosion were taken into custody. Officials said at least five men were being questioned. The FBI said in a statement no one had been charged with any crime, and the investigation is ongoing. Now, also in New Jersey, FBI was at an Elizabeth, New Jersey train station after a suspicious package was found, and later an explosive device was detonated by a police robot. It's unclear if there were any connections to the Chelsea bombing or the other explosion in Seaside Park, New Jersey. So we're starting to see this pattern emerge, and again, it's very early in the investigation, and we'll chat about that in just a minute. We don't want to jump to conclusions, but New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says that residents should expect a heightened security presence as the investigation continues. Now, you may know the United Nations General Assembly kicks off this week. That's going to draw leaders from all around the world. Whether that's connected to this, these possible terrorist attacks, we don't know, but certainly it would seem there could be some kind of connection. The mayor says that people in New York are going to see a very substantial police presence this week, which he described as bigger than ever. Meanwhile, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, says he has directed state police and National Guard to deploy an additional 1,000 uniformed police officers out of an abundance of caution to high-profile locations across the state. He says, we are increasing security, and all of our state agencies will remain on alert. So something all of us need to be praying about. We'll update you with more details on those stories and the terrible stabbing at the mall in St. Cloud, Minnesota, coming up here on Faith Radio. Stick with us. Welcome back. 8 minutes past the hour at Faith Radio. It's Bill Meyer with Rebecca Maxwell and Paul Perreault as we're trying to just unpack what's happened over the last 24, 48 hours or so, both in New York City and in Minnesota. Now, to update you on the mall stabbing in St. Cloud, Faith Radio is based in Minnesota, so this is very close to home for us. A family member is identifying the man suspected of stabbing nine people in the shopping mall. The suspect's father says that Dahir Adan was responsible for the attack Saturday night inside the Crossroads Center Mall. He is a St. Cloud State University student, worked as a private security guard. As you may have heard in the news, he was shot and killed after the incident. All of those victims, thankfully, are expected to recover. Meanwhile, the governor of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, is one of many people condemning the attacks. As you may have heard, ISIS news agency claims the attacker was a supporter of the Islamic State, and the FBI is now investigating it as a possible terrorist attack. The governor said, "I'm appalled at the terrible attacks on innocent Minnesotans in St. Cloud." He went on to say, "I'm deeply grateful to the heroic law enforcement officer whose swift response prevented an even worse attack." Rebecca, I was reading that story. As you may know, this was an off-duty police officer from a different town who happened to be in the mall when the stabbing occurred. He confronted the suspect. The suspect tried to lunge at him with the knife. He was able to take out the suspect, kill the suspect.
I think at the point that somebody is coming at you with a knife, they're no longer a suspect.
Well, there you go. Yes,
he acted in accordance with, I think, a biblical understanding of justice and preservation of life. So well, I'm very glad that man was able to subdue this person who decided that they were going to take matters into their own hands, decide to violently disregard life. I believe there were seven men and two women that were stabbed. Now, none of them have had life-threatening injuries, which is something I think to be thankful for.
Very thankful.
But it's I mean, these are people of just all ages, all types. I mean,
innocent people in a mall shopping.
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that there was somebody that was there that was capable of standing up and saying, no, you will not do this. I mean, I thank God for that person.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, one of the things we should do throughout the day today is to pray for those victims. Thankfully, none of them seriously injured. But man, oh, man, we want to be praying for their quick recovery and certainly the psychological trauma that they've all. You can't even imagine. You're with your family. On a evening in a mall, a place you don't expect anything like this to happen, and all of a sudden this madman, frankly, starts attacking your family and friends.
Right, and you don't expect something like that in a place like St. Cloud, Minnesota. I mean, it's
right.
Just out there in the middle of Minnesota. It's, a good hour, more than an hour away from the Twin Cities. It's not a central area. All of a sudden, this happens. So this gets to the bigger question, what the motivation to hear Adan had for doing this. I mean, he did claim an allegiance to
ISIS,
Allah,
right.
That, and ISIS, yeah, he's a soldier of the Islamic State. Of course, I think it's in the Islamic State's interest to anytime something like this happens, anytime there's a hint of any Muslim fervor, that they're going to grab onto it and say, yep,
sure.
He's with us. He's
one
with
of
us.
Our
so
guys.
He's a franchisee of jihad. So,
mm-hmm.
So that, again, what was going on in his mind, we don't know yet.
Well, the bigger issue, I think, for all of us, and this is where I think this whole lone wolf thing becomes very, very serious. We don't know how many individuals there are like this in the U.S. who are kind of on the fringes. They're angry. They've got this distorted view of Islam, and we don't know how many of them may really have contact with ISIS or just be acting strictly on their own and in a frankly unstable way. You know, we don't know about this guy's mental stability, but I think all of us need to be really cognizant of the fact that there are a lot of individuals out there like this that could put us in danger.
Well, I was going to just add at that point, there's the big issue of, again, what motivated him? What caused it? Did he feel isolated by some reason or persecuted? That's something here with a lot of talk of immigration, which I know we'll deal with later this morning with Dr. Land. But when we sometimes talk here in America about certain policies, not to say that we don't talk about them. It's a matter of how we talk about them, because there's people like these Somalis who are – they still feel like outsiders here in America.
Right.
Now, the church I attend, we've been for a long time, or especially when the Somalis were first coming here 15, 20 years ago, helping them out, trying to help them integrate, teaching them English, helping their families. Is that what they see the face of not just America but even as us Christians? What is our face toward them? Are we showing love, support, trying to share the gospel, yes, but also just showing genuine love and care for these people? Or do they see us as angry? Rah, rah, rah?
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good point. And Rebecca, yesterday you and I were emailing back and forth about one of the things about this terrorism and immigration and refugee issue is they all kind of get mixed together in a blender.
Yes.
And yet they're really separate issues.
And I think that's either sometimes it can be intentional to sort of cloud the issue, maybe on the part of people that are pushing a specific policy response on one side of the aisle or the other. But sometimes it's just because we don't know and we hear these terms thrown about interchangeably. I think it's important to recognize that there is a difference between a refugee who is a foreign national to America that has come here through the process of law and has been vetted and is here through special circumstance that we're allowing them to be here because something's going on in their home country, it's dangerous for them, or they're being persecuted religious. There's lots of times it's a religious persecution thing. They're here through the channels of law. Then there are illegal immigrants that are here who are foreign nationals who are here outside of the law, who are in the country but have not been through the process of either citizenship, naturalization, all of that. So they are existing outside the law. Those are two different categories and I think have two different responses and attitudes as we think about this issue. And then outside of all of that are terrorists, people that are openly and actively seeking to do the U.S. harm. Now, could terrorists be in either of those two groups?
Sure.
It's possible, yeah. But it's not a defining element of either of those two groups. I think it's important for us to recognize in the same way that we're really talking, no matter which of those three groups, we're talking about two different jurisdictions. We're talking about the policy response from the leaders of our nation who have to deal with the security of our person and our property. That's their job. And then we have the private response, especially in the hearts of believers. How do we as people relate to the people that we encounter in our lives? Two different areas, two different concerns and jurisdictions that I think God has given to each one of us. And I think it's just important to clarify in our minds which realm we're talking about, because they can all intersect, but they are not all interchangeable.
Boy, I'd like that. Very well said. And, you know, I think the other thing—
Can't add much more to that.
No.
But sorry, guys. I had extra coffee this morning.
No, it's great. The other thing we have to remember is that as Christians, even though today I think there's a real heightened sense of anxiety in this country, we have to remember God has not given us a spirit of fear, and that the Bible tells us so clearly we have a God who will never leave us and never forsake us. And yes, there's a temptation of all of us to just be looking around every corner looking for danger. But the fact is, we have this Heavenly Father who promises that no matter what will happen in this life, and a lot of bad things happen in this life, frankly, and a lot of bad things have happened over the last 48 hours, but we have a Heavenly Father who cares for us so deeply. And we need to really fall back on that and cast our anxiety upon the Lord, and He will give us strength. So thanks, you guys, for your insights. Appreciate it. 17 past the hour, and this is Faith Radio. Welcome back. 19 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Bill and Rebecca here with you. Continue to pray for the victims of the St. Cloud Mall stabbings and, of course, the law enforcement authorities in New York who are doing their best to put all the pieces together, both in New York and New Jersey, with these possibly connected terrorist attacks. We don't want to jump to conclusions so early in the investigation, but boy, oh boy, it's starting to seem like there is some coordination here. I want to move on to something different this morning. On Mondays, one of the things we like to do is give you a chance, if you've got any questions for me about marriage or parenting or child development, teen issues, we love to give you the chance to email in your questions. And the email's really easy. It's just drbill@myfaithradio.com, drbill@myfaithradio.com. Rebecca, who have we heard from this morning?
Well, we've heard from Corinne in Sioux Falls, and we're glad to have you listening out there, Corinne. She's giving us not an easy question to deal with, but I think one that a lot of people could relate to, unfortunately. She says, "Dear Dr. Bill, my grandmother is in the final stages of cancer. She is wasting away, and her physical changes have been dramatic since her great-granddaughters, my girls, who are 3 and 6 years old, last saw her. In Grandma's moments of clarity, she's asked to see my girls one last time, and everyone in the family thinks this is a good idea except me. I'm concerned that my girls are too young to be exposed to the situation and will be frightened by Grandma's appearance, even though they're asking lots of questions about what's going on. I don't know how to explain the concept of death without creating more fear in them that everyone they love is going to leave them. What do you think?"
Wow, Corinne. First of all, I'm sorry for your grandmother's situation, and I realize this is a very tough decision for you. You want to protect your children from fear and pain. All of us do, and yet you want to honor your grandmother's wishes to see her great grandchildren one last time. And I guess my personal perspective on this is, death is part of life, and that with the proper type of preparation, it would actually be good to allow your daughters to say goodbye to your grandmother. You want to be honest with your girls about what's happening, and use age-appropriate language to explain to them that great-grandma is very, very sick. Tell them that sometimes people get so sick that their bodies don't work right anymore, and they may look very different than they used to. Let them know that great-grandma has lost a lot of weight because of her sickness and that she's very skinny right now. And if she's lost her hair, you want to prepare your daughters for that as well. Explain all of this in a very calm way. If you are anxious or fearful, your daughters are going to pick up on that, and that is going to cause them to be afraid. Tell them that great-grandma would like them to say goodbye before she dies. And you didn't mention your grandmother's spiritual beliefs, but if she's a Christian, you want to share with your daughters that God is going to give grandma a brand new healthy body in heaven, one that will never get sick and never die. And even though your daughters may not, you know, fully comprehend that right now at their age, it's important to focus on that really hopeful aspect of the situation. And let me recommend, Corinne, an excellent children's book about death that you can read to your daughters. It's entitled Someone I Love Died by Christine Tangwald, and it really directs children to God as the ultimate source of comfort and security, and has some practical suggestions in there, too, for helping kids cope with the death of a loved one. So thank you for writing, Corinne. I pray that God will help you make the right decision about the visit to your grandmother. We appreciate you writing in.
We have another email from Marla, who is listening on Faith Radio in St. Paul. And she says, Dear Dr. Bill, I'm 9 months pregnant, and I would like to know the best way to explain birth to my four-year-old son, Brandon. He's questioning me about how the baby will arrive. For example, he says, will the baby make a hole in your belly? I've explained that I'm going to the hospital soon and that God will help me bring the baby home in a special way. But this is not a satisfactory answer to my son. Do you have any questions about the best way to explain the birth process to him honestly and tastefully?
Okay,
here you
Marla.
Go, Dr. Bill.
Yeah. You know, Marla, a lot of parents struggle with to answer this type of question from their young kids. But if you think about it, this is really a wonderful opportunity to teach your son about the miracle of birth and the sanctity of life. When discussing human sexuality with kids, the best approach, in my opinion, is give them enough information to satisfy them and answer their questions without going into so much detail that they get, you know, their little minds get overwhelmed. Now, it appears that your son's chief concern is, how is that baby going to get out of mommy's tummy? When my wife Lisa was 8 months pregnant, our then four-year-old son expressed concern that the birth would leave a big hole in her tummy. And what we simply explained to him that, well, there's a part of mommy's body that God made very special, and he designed a mommy's body so that when the baby is ready to be born, that special part opens up real, real wide enough for the baby to come out. And then after the baby's born, that part of her body goes back to the way it was before. And that satisfied him. And then he repeated the explanation to his two-year-old sister. So they had some discussions about it. Now, here's another thing to remember, Marla, and I think this is important, to use medically accurate names for body parts. Most pediatricians would agree with that approach. You're going to need to determine to yourself, for yourself when you want to introduce these terms to your son. But one thing I would caution against is you don't want to be using slang words or cute little names for private parts. This can cause kids a lot of confusion and even embarrassment later on in life. So I think medically accurate terms are the way to go. By the way, there's an excellent series of children's books that you can use to teach your kids about sexuality. It's called God's Design for Sex. It's written by Stan and Brenna Jones, and you can get that series from most online Christian booksellers. So thank you so much for writing, Marla. If you've got a question for me about marriage, parenting, or any family issue, you can write to me at drbill@myfaithradio.com.